Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Boy, the European team is long hitters as well. Might be the best European team that they've ever brought to America. I mean, how do you beat like Oberg and Hovland as a pairing?
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The League of Ireland pod
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts. Be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
All right, welcome along. It is the League of Ireland pod. Nathan with you this week. Vinnie Perth and Johnny Dunleavy with us as well. How are you, lads?
All good.
Where are you, Vinny? I was sitting here waiting for you to join me in studio and just never. You're a busy man. I get it.
Yeah, you just can't drive around Dublin anymore. I've given up.
So, this could be it. This could be the week where the league title is decided. Shamrock Rovers will be champions if they beat Bohemians tomorrow night and if Drogheda United beat Derry City. We are going to be live from Tallaght Stadium tomorrow evening on News Talk, on Off the Ball from 7 o'clock. Jonathan Higgins and Owen Doyle are going to bring us full commentary of the Dublin Derby between Rovers and Bows. Is it going to happen tomorrow night, Vinny?
I have a feeling, only because law of averages, I feel Rovers might win tomorrow against Bows. But Bows has been, there's no doubt Bows have caused them all sorts of problems. I'd love Bows to attack the game the way they did in the last time they played them. They just got in the face, high intensity, put Rovers under pressure that we haven't seen many teams do before. And that makes it a brilliant game. But my gut feeling is it'll probably happen for Rovers tomorrow. Yeah, I think it will. Yeah.
Johnny, it's not in their hands right now, but there wouldn't be a better time for Shamrock Rovers to do it, beating Bows. And like the Drogheda Derry one is just so hard to predict because I don't know if anyone trusts Derry. And I don't know if anyone trusts Derry to win back-to-back games to keep it running even past the next couple of weeks. What do you think will happen across the two? We'll get deeper into the two of them in a moment.
Yeah, it's a very interesting Dublin Derby, obviously, for a number of reasons. And I suppose coming into it, what an incentive for Shamrock Rovers. The fact that like to beat Bows and win the league, it doesn't really get any bigger than that for them. Like from a Bows perspective, probably, you know, in terms of the table and league positions, probably a bigger derby for them, arguably. And on top of that, like to beat Shamrock Rovers four times in the league season would be pretty incredible achievement for them. Personally, I actually don't think they'll do it tomorrow night. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Shamrock Rovers won the game, but you could very well see Drogheda and Derry playing out a one-all draw. It wouldn't surprise me in the least, so they might just have to wait another week.
So the story so far is that Bohemians have won all three Dublin derbies. So we'll remember back on the opening weekend of the season when they beat them 1-0 at the Aviva. Then on Easter Monday when Shamrock Rovers were absolutely cruising, 2-0 up with 20 minutes to go, and this remarkable comeback from Bows to win 3-2 in Talla. And then the last one was maybe the most straightforward one for Bows when they won 2-0 at Dalyman Park. Vinnie, I was out with Stephen Bradley earlier and just asking him about what is it about Bows in comparison to everyone else in the league that has caused them so many problems. And he sort of bristled at it that, well, actually, the first two games we were much, much the better team, didn't take the chances. Fair enough, last time out, Bows were the better side, deserved to win that game. Would you see it like that?
I think to be fair, in the first game of the season, you would understand why Bows won it. The last game would stick. The last game when Bows beat Rovers, he's right, Bows were much the better team. And what is really sort of, in one sense, disappointing, that nobody in the rest of the league has caught on to why they were dominant against them. It was the front sort of foot press. Now, Rovers weren't at the very, very best on the night, and there was a couple of defensive errors. I know James Clark caused them all sorts of problems on the night, and just a little bit of uncertainty at the back from Rovers. But the uncertainty came from Bowles putting them under lots of pressure. And I think Bowles' strongest point, and it has been all season for me, is that front four or five, whoever plays from front six. And I think the advantage of them there is getting after Rovers, putting that back three under pressure. You even go back to Keith Long's days. Where did Bowles always hurt Rovers? They hurt them in the wide area. So, I mean, you sort of feel like they have a way of playing that suits playing against Shamrock Rovers. So, I'm on the fence on that one. I'd say Bowes have certainly deserved to win two of the three of them, and I wouldn't say they deserve to lose any of them. So they've just had the measure on Rovers this year.
After the defeat to Derry and the drama of that night at Daly Mount, a really important win last time out for Bowes, and beating Waterford by 2-1 was obviously massive for them. Where are Bowes when you look at that table? Second place, either the second best team in the league for you, Johnny?
I'd say, to be fair, and what Vinny said as well, Nathan, I kind of echo that as well. I'd say they probably are the second best team in the league, really. Maybe not on current form. You could probably argue, really, the Pats are probably, at the moment, the form team in the league. But through the course of the season, I'd say the Bulls have, and it's probably something that they've, you know, I suppose maybe it comes from the manager, maybe it comes from the coaches, that they haven't shown Shamrock Rovers the respect, maybe, that some of the other teams haven't shown them, or have shown them, I should say. And as Vinny says, they've caused them problems in wide areas, but on top of that, for me, I actually think that the quality that Bowes have in the middle of the field is something that's probably underestimated, and can, you know, they're well able to compete against Shamrock Rovers. So you're talking Dawson Devoy, Ross Tierney and Adam McDonald. Like, when they're on top of their game, they really, really are a top three, and they can get on top of Shamrock Rovers in there. So, to be fair, I think they've had a brilliant season, and, you know, they're going to cause Rovers plenty of problems on Friday night too.
I think the interesting one on it, Saturday night, and real quick, is a lot of the success came with James Clark, and I don't mean he played as a false nine, but he did at times earlier on the season. And it'd be interesting to see, did he play James Taylor because he's in the sort of building now, or did he leave him out and go with that Clark? And because we know Rovers are very dominant in that sort of Healy position, and who plays alongside him, whoever it is, and that sort of box they have. And it'd be interesting to see, do the Bulls leave out, you know, the main striker as such, and play Clark and Tierney with a little bit of width, say, from Mickelson and not Danny Grant, on the other wing, Adam Rooney. So that's the big call, I think, for Reynolds to see, because that worked and worked so well, and allowed to put be dominant against Rovers, allowed to put them under lots of pressure.
It's a very busy period coming up for Shamrock Rovers, so I get the sense Bradley is keen to get this done as quickly as possible, and he can rotate his squad whatever way he wants then. So the Bohemians tomorrow night, then they're in Prague for the first game in the Conference League to take on Sparta Prague on Thursday night. Then they've the FAI Cup semi-final against Kerry on the Sunday. Then league games against Shells and Pats before they take on Celje ahead of the final run-in for the season, and there's obviously potentially a cup final and more Conference League games and all of that. Looking ahead even to the Conference League with Rovers, when you go through their fixture list, it's not straightforward. It doesn't feel like there's a Larn or a TNS in there. So they've Sparta Prague away, then Celje at home is their first home game, then they go to take on AK Athens, Shakhtar Donetsk, Breda Blik, and finish up against Hammer and Spartans, which should be the most straightforward one. But this is probably going to be more of a difficult task to rack up points quickly than it was last year, Vinny.
Yeah, I think it's a lot harder now. And I think, we don't want to take that away from them, but they had very winnable ties last year. Now they've got to go to the well and win. That's why having the league wrapped up is a huge advantage to them this year. I know it's not done and dusted mathematically, but Rovers are about to win the league. That's almost certainty at this stage. So that allows them, but I think going back real quickly to Bowes, that doesn't allow them to take foot off the pedal against Bowes. I think they'll have to be, and they've enough time between the game now and the game next week. But I think this is a big test of this group in terms of, I think they're good enough to go and get results, but they've got to be foot perfect in the European games and with the set of fixtures they have, to pick up results and to get out of the group the way they did last year.
But they're much better than they were last year.
Yeah, and that's a huge point. I think they're much, much better in terms of, well, they're certainly playing better. They know they have a way of playing that suits them in Europe. I wonder last year, did sort of the Healy combination with Poom, did that suit them? Nugent and Poom sort of suit them in terms of running power. Do they have that? Is Nugent at the form that's required this year? Have they got the right balance right for European games? Because it has to be more than just running power now. Again, you're not playing lesser teams. you're playing teams of a similar standard or better. So they've got to have quality in that midfield as well. So that'd be a big test for them in there. So they have to be foot perfect in Europe or else they will be punished. That's what happens when you whip levels.
Where are you on what their best team for Europe is? Because it definitely felt last year that when they started taking on the tougher teams in the Conference League, that Stephen Bradley had a pretty clear vision of what he wanted, which, as Vinny said, was more athleticism. We didn't see Graham Burke starting as many games. Jack Byrne, obviously, at the time had injuries. But we sort of started to see Marcus Poom, who had always been in and out of the team, was a key figure during that run. Does that mean, again, that maybe Graham Burke next Thursday night in Prague is going to be the unlucky one who misses out in the starting team?
I'm not totally certain myself, Nathan. Like, I suppose I would look back at, I know it's a big challenge for them, and there are some, you know, real powerhouses of European football in that group, but you'd have to say how well Shamrock Rovers acquitted themselves against Santa Clara, home and away, kind of shows what they're capable of. And probably the flexibility that they have in their formation. So for me personally, I'd say really the back three and the wing backs kind of pick themselves, and it's the midfield four where Stephen Bradley's gonna have to tinker possibly a little bit. But let's say at home against Santa Clara, for example, they play the box in midfield, but they kind of played a flat three with a 10 against Santa Clara at home with Watts, Nugent and Healy, who has been like brilliant all year. And that's probably, that formation with Mandrew in front is probably something that when they go away from home in particular and try to pick up results, I would argue that's probably their strongest, you know, their best way of doing that. In games then, maybe where they're going to have more of the ball, like for example in the last game, as you mentioned, they can then change that to have two holders and two attackers and maybe try and pick pockets a little bit more when they have a little bit more of the ball. So I think really he probably has a very fair idea of what his best team is, and then, you know, to be able to complement that with bringing Graham Burke into a number 10 role or an attacking midfield role, it's a lovely luxury to have, that's for sure.
The key to that, Nathan, sorry, is, and Johnny will tell you this from playing in Europe, is there's certain teams, and I think Santa Clara probably an example of, there's certain teams in Europe that you fear as Irish teams when you've got pace everywhere. When there's certain teams you play who are technically brilliant and belong at a higher level, and actually you don't fear them as much because they're not going to run in behind you.
We're talking about, say, when we saw Shelburne play Carabag, and I think we commented on it during the commentary of, he almost felt that there was somebody Shell's players had never come up against a player that quick. There was literally nothing they could do to prepare for it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So Bradley, that's where the analysis of the opposition is huge. And I always go back to my own experience. There was times we would have used Patrick McElhenney as a right winger, only if the left, and that allowed us get an extra player in. So it might have been him and say Ronan Finn in the number 10. So all of a sudden, a bit like Rovers, we had two advanced midfielders. But we wouldn't do that if the left back was a bomber and he was just flying up and down because Patrick wouldn't run after him. And we play a John Milton. So that's where the opposition will dictate who and what their systems is at different stages. And away from home, if they feel that they have enough legs about them, then he'll be a bit more expensive. If he feels he can get the run over when they lose the ball high up the pitch, they're going to be under a lot of pressure, he'll put legs into the team. So and that's the flexibility Johnny's talking about that's in their squad.
Yeah, like, interesting that night against Santa Clara, was it Gabriel Silva was the player who's the fastest player in world football, and they only brought him off the bench. And actually, you'd wonder if Santa Clara were thinking like that was the one thing maybe Rovers might have struggled to deal with. And did they struggle to deal with when he came on?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pace. And it's we have quick lads in our league and people who can hit top speeds that would be premiership level. What we don't have is, and that's why they're here, unfortunately, is players who can do that and have huge amount of quality as well to the highest level. And that's going up the levels. Going up the levels is the pace in which people do new things. And you've often seen those European games where you're going, as an Irish team, oh, we're in this, and all of a sudden, some Brazilian does a 1-2 in around the corner and you're 1-0 down going, where did that come from? And that happens so often. I'd see Johnny nodding his head. I can imagine a few Brazilians went in behind them the other time.
Plenty of them, but I'm trying to forget about them. That's all this. But like, I mean, you're totally right. As you go up the levels, really, if it's a technically good team, to some degree, you can negate that with how you set up against them, and you can kind of keep them playing in front of you. But if you're up against someone that has that individual bit of magic, as you go up the levels, the pace and the power, and I think we're probably, people in Ireland probably underestimate literally how quick and how powerful these lads can be. And, you know, we would have lads, like I remember when I was up in Sligo, we would have had Johnny Kenny. Johnny Kenny's quick. He is quick. There's no doubt about it. But what I was sort of saying to the lads is when he goes over to England, they're all quick. Everyone's quick. The centre-backs are quick. The full-backs are quick. And all of a sudden, it's just totally different. It's just levels. And look, that's what we're here for. That's what Rovers are here for. And it's something to test themselves against, you know.
And look, that's the bigger picture of Irish football, isn't it? That it feels we went after more technical-type players at a time when the rest of the world was starting to move on to assuming they'll have the technical ability, but the physicality and the athleticism suddenly became more important, and because of the infrastructure in place, we're miles behind in that.
Yeah, we had a lot of people trying to develop the next Xavi and Iniesta. We spent 5 or 6 years doing that. That's not the Irish mindset. And look, we've improved the technical ability of a lot of our players, and absolutely no doubt about that. And it's a little bit, I think it's a good way to bring up, say, someone like Mason Mealyon, Nathan. Think about the penalty one the other day. He's running past the centre half, and no disrespect to the Galway centre half. Even if he's playing academy football or youth football next season, as soon as he turns 18, or reserve football, the centre half he's up against ain't that slow. Can be sure of it. And he's got to do a little bit more than what he did the other day to get a lad sent off. Now, we hope and we pray that he has it all to be absolutely outstanding, but he's gone up a few levels, and that's the difference. We have to accept that, look in the mirror and go, levels, people are higher levels in Europe and beyond, you know.
In saying that, let's talk about Mason Mealyon then, because he's just celebrated his birthday this week, just turned 18 years of age, and may well end up being the top scorer in the League of Ireland. Fully enough, the top scorer in the League of Ireland is Podge Amond, who is the two guys behind him competing are the combined age, with 18-year-old Mason Mealyon and 19-year-old Owen Elding trying to chase down 37-year-old Potter Gavin.
Yeah, he'll love you saying that, Nathan.
So 12 goals so far this season for Mason Mealyon. And you can see online, such as the sort of madness of how English clubs are covered, a lot of people starting to get excited who are Tottenham fans of, ooh, look what this young kid is starting to do. It is still a heck of a goal-scoring number to get to as a 17-year-old. And while, yes, he's going to face faster defenders, he's also had lumps kicked out of him this season in a way that he's not going to have when he goes across to underage football in England. And you'd have to think that's going to stand to him. And it does seem he's got better and better. I remember, Vinny, we were covering games at the start of the season when he was playing up front with Aidan Keane. It wasn't quite working out, and there were sort of games passing him by. To like being a talisman for a team with ambition at 17, 18, there's not many kids who are going to go over with that sort of experience.
No, like, I mean, I don't know. In fairness, he might have got kicked around the place this year, but they're not just going to hug him and welcome him into the league in England either. You know, it's going to be tough for him. But I suppose, Nathan, you're spot on in that through the season he has progressed more, and the team have probably found a way of feeding him better as well. They're probably playing around him a little bit more and using his physical prowess and his speed, and probably in his two goals at the weekend against Cork. He actually had missed a chance before he got one, but the second time he was through on goal, at no point did I think he was going to miss. Like, at no point whatsoever. And I think that's a great sign of a striker, that you kind of know if this lad gets a chance, he's going to score. And look, as we've said, it's a big step up when you move across and when he goes into the underage teams over there. And please God, he will progress through all the levels. I think what he probably has above others is he clearly has the technical ability, but he's also got a physical ability, and he's only going to get stronger. Like, I mean, can you imagine him in 4 or 5 years with the SNC that they're going to, you know, that they're going to have in England, the, you know, what they're going to do with him, how they're going to develop him? Yeah, I think he's got a massive future ahead.
Am I right in saying, Vinny, that often in these deals that are going to become more common, such as Mason Mealyon and Victor Osimhenvuna, the part of the deal is that they will have to play a certain amount of first team football before they go in that year?
Yeah, there will be an element of that, absolutely. the difference is this is not a loan. So they've just done the, sometimes with a loan, you've got to play a player at a certain time. And if you don't play him, the fee can be more than your highest earner, for argument's sake, on a weekly basis. So it almost nearly makes you play him. I think on Mason, I think in a strange way, he's being benefited by Aidan Keane getting into it because it allows him to get a run of games. He did struggle at the start of the season, particularly in that sort of 10 position. I think he's been incredible this year. I think he's shown that he's a breath of fresh air in the league. His ability, Donny's right. Yes, he can work on the technical side of it, which is quite high, but is sort of, and we're starting to see a resurgence of centre forwards that like the back to play, getting close to centre halves, and teams wanting a focal point in the attack. He can do that part of it as well. So he has it all. I hope you slag me over this over time. My only fear is, what's he missed out on the last 2 years that other 18-year-olds in England have had? Yes, he's had men's football. Yes, he's had kick lumped out of him. Yes, he scored European goals. But unfortunately for us, that's only a little old Ireland where I just hope. Mason Mealy is signing for Tottenham Hotspur. We want him to become a Tottenham Hotspur first-choice striker. That's ultimately the goal. That's why he's gone there.
Mm.
And how many other strikers in Tottenham Hotspur are further down the track than him? That's my only concern about, obviously, Brexit. We are where we are. So he's done the best with what he can do. Hope he's not too far behind come 6 months, 12 months time where he's starting to get into the eight. And they will give him time because they know they've got him late. But as a 19, 20-year-old, 21-year-old, is he behind the other ones that are in there, as Johnny said, with the best? I mean, we've got S&C coaches over here, don't get me wrong, but just everything is done at a different level in England. You have to accept that.
And probably on this side of the water, there'll need to be a level of patience as well, because, you know, Johnny Kenny is a good example, and Johnny Kenny's much further along in his career that, you know, when he leaves Shamrock Rovers to go back to Celtic, like the form that he was in, the goals he's scoring, and, you know, he's still just about getting a little bit of a look in now. That's sort of 6-7 months of a career gone in a flash. Like, how many games will he have played between January and January at Celtic?
And but Nathan, Pats fans won't like me saying that because that's the way we're tribal in this country. But Donny Kenny's trying to get into a Celtic team.
Mm.
They're worlds apart trying to get into a Tottenham Hotspur team. It's like, you know, so that's my only fear. I hope I'm completely wrong on that. He's playing at the next World Cup run. He's scoring goals in the Premiership in the next 2 years. But that's Brexit.
Is that realistic? I wonder again, what is realistic? And obviously Evan Ferguson was able to do it, but even Tottenham are at another level to Brighton.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many kids are breaking through? Lucas Bergvall's there, but he's probably 20 now at this stage. Are they going to sign an Archie Gray, who's a kid, but they sign him for many, many millions? Like, we just don't know. We're sort of putting our unique selling point is that we can give these guys loads of games in men's football and hope that that somehow counters the lack of everything else that they're missing out on.
I don't know. I don't want to be critical. It sounds like I'm being critical. I'm not. Like, in 18, 19, 20-year-old, that Spurs could be playing in League One, people at Spurs would see that as a higher level than what we're playing at. I'm not saying it is. That's what they'd see. So it's one to watch. That's all I'm saying. It's one to watch. I don't know. Like, I don't know what Johnny thinks. He's marked enough of these centre forwards. He's physically strong, but I think he's a lot of growing up to do and into that body as well over the next sort of year, 18 months.
He definitely has. And I suppose that's the thing about, you know, you talk about a club like Spurs. Essentially, it's endless resources that they have. Really, that's what you're talking here. That if they want to improve their centre forward division, and they want to go out and spend 50 million, they can. So that's how good that he has to be when he's 22 or 23 years of age. That's what he has to get to. I really, really do hope he gets there. But you have to remember, this is the cream of the crop. And I would agree with you, Vinny, in the sense that it is different to being at Celtic. They don't have the endless resources. They're, you know, I mean, you have fans protesting about how much money they spend on players as it is. So if he was going to a team like Celtic, would he get more opportunities? Quite possibly. But you know what a chance for him. You can't turn down a move to the Premiership like this. And I suppose if you look at it almost like a tree, let's say, if it doesn't work out for him at Spurs, he drops down a level, could be a team in the Championship, and all of a sudden he might flourish there. He's a very young man. He has a lot of growing to do, a lot of developing, and who knows what the future holds, really.
When you look at the league table and you look at the fixtures this week, as Johnny Ward is prone to say, what a league. Like, it is mad with five games left that everyone is still fighting for something, whether it's European football, survival, and maybe tomorrow night's going to give us a lot more answers as to where we are with that. So, Galway United against Cork City, aim in DC Park. Anything less than a win here for Cork, and it's definitely over, if it's not already. They have a really tough fixture list after this. They're playing a lot of the European contenders, as well as Sligo Rovers between now and the end of the season, and obviously One Eye as well on a cup semi-final for Cork. But if there is to be the greatest of great escapes, this is where it needs the full-on kickstart. Do you give them a chance?
I suppose, seeing as they're my old club, I'll take this one. It's highly, highly unlikely, Nathan, and I don't really see any way out of it for them. I suppose the Cup, as you say, is their last hope of redemption this year, but the game against St. Pat's last weekend was probably a microcosm of the whole season for them, and it's probably something that we talked about maybe back in July, I think, in that the goals they conceded in the game were from set pieces, from overplaying and from individual mistakes, and it just probably it has culminated in the position that they're in the league. And Unfortunately, that's just where it is for Cork City. But you know, they can have a big bearing certainly on who is in the playoff spot with playing Galway now and Sligo Rovers second last game of the season, and obviously maybe some form of redemption in the Cup. But no doubt it's been very disappointing for them and everyone down there.
Understandably, there's a lot been going on at Galway United, and I'm sure a very difficult situation for the players with the passing of Ollie Horgan, and their form in recent months has left them in a position now where they're currently in the relegation playoff spot. Like, it does strike me, looking at the results, that there's an awful lot of tight games there, and Galway United are one of those teams that last season they won an awful lot of tight games, this season they're losing an awful lot of tight games. That is there a significant difference in terms of the quality of football they're playing from 12 months ago, or are they just coming out on the wrong side of things?
I think it's been a combination of all of them things. Probably the goals have dried up, and ultimately goals wins you games. I think they've defended more or less the same. They've played the same way in many ways, looking for stuff off Hickey. They've been okay at different stages, but I'll put you this way. If Galway end up in the playoff position, I don't think Cork are catching them. And I get, as a Dundalk former employee, I put it that way, to Johnny, get no enjoyment out of that. I think it's very sad. But I think they're in a good place to bounce back. If they can stay professional, I think that's huge for them. But with Galway, if Galway end up in the playoff, I think they'll be fine. And you can put it down to one of them years and rebuild. If Waterford, for example, not to move on, Nathan, but Waterford end up in the playoff, I'd have a real fear for them.
Yeah, can you talk a bit more about that? Because I've heard a couple of people say this, and I'm not surprised when it comes to Galway, because I've seen a lot of Galway this season, and maybe I've just always got them on a good day. But every time you watch them, they're just so well-organised, physical. They're such a nuisance to play for against the top teams in the league, that there's surely no way, just on Galway then, Johnny, there's no way any of the First Division teams could really get at them,
and could, like, you wouldn't imagine so, Nathan. Like, and I suppose it'll be very, like, I mean I know John, obviously I was at Cork for 7 years, five with John. I know him very well, and as you say, they're really well drilled and really well organized, and it's just been goals that have been the issue for them. Like, they're the second lowest scorers in the league. And it's been hard for them in terms of how creative they are, and they just haven't been able to convert, as you say, those tight games and not take their chances, really. And obviously losing Greg Cunningham as well was a big, big blow. Like, you know, what a player to be able to bring back, and hasn't really been able to feature for a long time during the summer. But they haven't won a league game since June. And, you know, it's all well and good saying, yeah, they'll be fine in a playoff. But if you look at Cove's team, like, if you were to go through them player by player, I'm just taking Cove as an example because they're second in the First Division. But, like, Hakkinen, Griffin, Coleman, I just took a few notes. Niall O'Keefe, Barry Coffey, Dylan McGlade, Cian Murphy and Cian Bargary. These are all lads that have Premier Division experience. they really are not a bad team, and they on their day could certainly cause anyone problems. And you know, just put it this way: if it wasn't a playoff game and Cove go 1-0 up against Galway, are Galway going to have enough to get back into it? You know, I kind of see it a little bit differently myself.
So why do you think if Waterford were to end up in that position and end up in the playoff, Vinny, that they might be a little bit more nervous than Galway United should be?
I just think Galway, I take Johnny's point, there's not a Cove on paper, but I just think Galway operate at a higher level. I think against Pats over the last 2 weeks, just fine margins went against them at different stages. Obviously, the sending off is a huge one for them. But yes, scoring goals is a problem. It gets easier the levels you go down. And there's no doubt we all expect on form for Cove maybe to be the second team or the team that's in that. But the playoff can be mad in the first division. But just the difference with that and Waterford, and it sounds a bit funny because Waterford are 3 points ahead of Galway. I just get the sense that this Waterford group, there's been so many chopping and changing. Obviously, they changed manager. There's a real inconsistency about Waterford, and they have got some results out of the blue, and we haven't seen them coming, but it hasn't been a sort of... With Galway, you feel like they're unlucky, and but for another one or two things, they could be 9 points further on. But Waterford, it feels like they're maximised every inch of what they could have got so far this season. When you look at them at the back, Leahy's been injured in and out. Boyle has been injured all season. Porrick Almond aside, they've been so consistently inconsistent that you'd have a real fear for them. Their goalkeeper has been very good at times and been really poor at times. So on an off day, I think Galway have enough about them just to get over the line. On an off day, I think Waterford are getting done. So therefore, if you wanted to keep the league status quo outside of Cork, you want me almost like to say, we hope Galway end up in the playoff because we think they'll get that job done. There's just a fear about this Waterford team. When I'm watching them and going, I just don't know what I'm getting here, and it's just not good at times.
Waterford are away to Shells tomorrow night. So Shells are currently sixth in the table. They're on 43 points, but they do have a game in hand. That game's away to Shamrock Rovers. So they're probably hoping that Rovers get the league done before that game happens in Tala in a couple of weeks' time. And maybe they'll end up resting a few players for that. But obviously Shells also have European football. We're actually going to have live commentary next Thursday night of that game against Häcken, the Swedish side in Tala. That's next Thursday night. Did you play against Häcken, Johnny, back in the day?
Do you know what, Nathan? I'm thinking about it now. I'd say we did play against them, but unusually yet again, I think I was injured for it, as far as I remember.
That Cork team hacked everybody, Nathan. Never mind fucking hacking. They just battered everybody constantly.
Stop now, honey. Stop. You're only going back to that tunnel engine now. That's all you're out there now.
The management weren't shy of hacking people as well. I'll tell you what.
But there was none of us were too shy, in fairness.
No.
Vinny front and centre, doing Stephen Kenny's fighting as always.
That stood well to me, didn't it? That went down well.
you'll be rewarded in
the gates of heaven for that one.
Yeah, exactly. So, this is huge, obviously, for Shelburne and the European distraction, if you want to call that. How do you see Joey O'Brien going about these next few weeks, Vinny, in terms of prioritising? Yeah. Because... listen, this has been an incredible run and they're going to have a brilliant time over the next few months and Palace coming to Dublin and all that good stuff and the away trips that the Shells fans, I know, are just so excited about. But in the midst of that, they could find themselves knowing that, well, enjoy it now because you ain't getting it again next year.
Yeah, it is. That's a difficult one. Just my initial thought is, are they nearly better sacrificing some European games to get back in Europe again? The problem with that is then, the mouth is running around the brain here, Nathan. The problem with that is, like, two wins is worth nearly £1 million as well over the next 2 months. Club, in terms of, not a rebuild, but to add to what, they've started that rebuild already. They've got a fantastic squad. And they've done a lot of the heavy lifting for the start of next season already. So, it's difficult. I think the form has been up and down in the league. I sort of expect them to go to draw the last week and win, thinking, right, I had them down maybe a week or two ago as probably the one team between them and Pats that would probably sneak into third if anyone slipped up above them. But it's been difficult. So I'm not sure. I think he has it difficult. What he's got to do is use European games to say the lads, play well on a Sunday and you have a right chance of starting on the Thursday. Don't play well on the Sunday, you know, you're opening the door for someone else to come in. And ultimately then that will improve the results. He has to look at it that way. But it's a really difficult situation. I believe it's a board that are a dream to work with. That's my understanding from talking to people. So I don't think the board will put them under pressure to go and say, you know, sacrifice the league to win this game. I think it'd be left as football decisions. So there's a lot of money at stake, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So it's difficult.
Drogheda against Derry tomorrow night. Obviously, people are thinking about it in terms of the title, maybe more than its importance for both sides. Because if Derry win this, I think Johnny Drogheda are then relying on Rovers winning the league and hoping that they can somehow get ahead of Pats. Whereas if Drogheda can go and win this, well, Derry are right back in the mix.
Yeah, very, very much so. Like, and that result for Drogheda against Shells was a massive result. You know, it was their first league one in five, but to get it against Shells as well, it was huge for them. And I mean, looking at the game, Shells probably largely dominated it. Probably on another day would have scored three or four. But, you know, when it comes to this end of the season, the business end of the season, it's about being clinical. Drogheda, two shots on target, two goals. And you'd have to say Kareem took the first one really well. Shells be disappointed with the way they conceded the goals. But as I say, Drogheda is so, so clinical. And, you know, I have to say, the job that Kevin Doherty has done, you know, I know people talked about it last year when they won the FAI Cup and, you know, they gave him, rightly so too, gave him all the plaudits. But to sort of carry that on into this year with the budgetary constraints or whatever that you'd say they have. And, you know, a lot of people would have said they'd fall away halfway through the season and they haven't done that and they've put themselves right in the mix now. It's a tough place for Derry to go and you don't know what Derry you're going to get. So it wouldn't surprise me at all now. It wouldn't surprise me if it was a draw, as I said earlier, but it wouldn't surprise me if Drogheda got over the line either.
Shells had 77% possession in that game and it's been two wins, two draws. I was reading Daniel McDonald's article in the Indo, so it was 79-21, 77-23, 67-33 in the previous three matches. Kev Doherty was talking about it afterwards, says it's nonsense, the possession argument. I don't know if some people watch the football are educated and think that it's the most important thing. Couldn't be less important if you win the game. It's weird the way the game seems to be changing with long throws and defending. You're talking about Arsenal and Man City and how they defend. That's what we do. When we were bottom of the league, no one gave a shit about how we played. Nobody ever mentioned it. Vinnie Perth. Just throwing it out there to you.
Yeah, what do you say? I mean, they've done really well. What I've always been clear about is, and people hear what they want to hear. To be fair to Kev, he got, he uses it.
Puke football is what they heard, Vinnie.
Yeah, but again, you give me a chance to defend myself on that. If you had the ball up into the air six times in a row, it's not easy on the eye. If a player goes down and gets a bang on his shoulder and holds his head and bring on a physiotherapist to get treatment and you go over and do a coaching session, if someone sent out tell a goalkeeper to go down and lie on the ground, then it's not easy on the eye. So people have to call and say what you see. Now, what I will say is the last game I was at, by the way, was Balls and Derry. There was three timeouts in the game. Three timeouts. Very clear what they were. They were for instructions. One team conceded a goal. The keeper was told to go down, get injured. And we had a coaching session how they fixed themselves getting back into the game. So the one of the great teams, and I don't know whether they still do it, but one of the great teams used to have ball boys and the ball boy throw the ball back to their team. And then would be scratching his earlobe when the opposition had to throw in, slow the game down. So everyone has played the dark arts. But Drogheda do play a certain way. Can't get away from it. It works for them. It's Kevin getting the best out of the group of players he had. And if people hear the full context of where we are when it comes to people like Kevin is, he's done an incredible job with the group of players he has. But it ain't easy on the eye. And we're not saying long throws aren't. It's not long throws people have a problem with. I mean, it's very clever. They get a set piece 10 yards inside their own half. The three centre halves goes up. Goalkeeper kicks it as high as he can. And then the second phase, the three centre halves stay in the box. Hence, Quinn and Keely and Bulger Ball scored big goals. It's clever what they do, but there's times where it's not easy on the eye. It's times where they just teams not just draw it. It's now becoming a scourge on the league. Teams are pushing the dark arts too far, too far. Games are being ruined because of it. The timeout is now a new involvement, and we can make local rules at different stages. This one has to change. If a goalkeeper goes down injured and he hasn't been tackled a minute or two before that, or 5 minutes, then a corner to the opposition. Is that having to go with Rotterdam? No, I've just said to you, the last Bowes and Derry both done the same thing in the last game. So we've got to tidy up the game a little bit. But if people take that as criticism, Pep takes what I say as criticism, then I know he doesn't. He does and he doesn't. They have to use all of that stuff to galvanise themselves. They've done brilliantly. I think we all want to see fans Drogheda to get Europe through the league because they deserve it because of what happened to them last year. But I'll say it one more time. Maybe actually what will help them is if I said they won't get Europe and they can all, you know, flag me off for the next few months and laugh when they do. But it will be difficult for them. I don't see them getting Europe through the league, unfortunately for them.
Johnny, what are your thoughts on the Drogheda style then? And it's paying dividends. They're winning games. They're very comfortable not having the ball. They're very well organised. They know when to slow things down, when to delay things. I've been at games as well where I've seen Kev Doherty go mad at his goalkeeper for taking too much time when he feels there's opportunities because maybe it's so hardwired to consistently slow it down that maybe there's that bit still missing of picking your moments for all of this. Like, there's no question he's getting the most out of the talent that's available. But is there a better way of doing it?
See, I do a little bit of coaching down here in Kilkenny now, and I probably, when I came in initially, would have been a real purist. Let's play from everywhere and let's pass the ball and let's do that. And
but a purist in Kilkenny probably, now is playing hurling, in fairness.
Well, everyone is. Honestly, I can't get over it. There's nothing only hurling down here, and I don't know one end of a stick from the other. But, like, I suppose it's something similar to the Irish team, really, in that we're trying to be technically good and we're trying to outplay people. Whereas maybe it's something we need to focus on rather than be all about style, be all about results to some degree anyway. And like, if you look at Drogheda, I played in Cork City teams where undoubtedly we might not have been the easiest on the eye. Well, I'll tell you one thing, we were a hard team to play against and we would have got results against you. And, you know, Drogheda are similar to that, albeit with some very, very good players as well. And like, when they do get the ball in the opposing half, let's say, they're well able to play. A lot of lads well able to play. And you see that with the goal that Kareem scored at the weekend. So it's probably, you know, are we too much? Pep Guardiola has probably changed everybody's mindset in terms of what football should look like, right? And there's no right way or wrong way of playing. I guarantee if you ask the Drogheda fans, would you love to play like Pep and get relegated? Or would you love to play, you know, a little bit more, let's say, direct and finish third? I know well what the Drogheda fans would say, and I think it's something that we probably need to be a little bit more realistic about, in that there's different ways to play the game, there's different ways to win, and it's kind of horse for courses to some degree.
Yeah, and can I just say, Nathan, defend myself one last time. Johnny, you played against a team that I would have coached. People look back with rose-tinted glass under that Dundalk team. We didn't pass the living daylights out of football, like, absolutely not. There's a fine balance. I'm not just, when I talk about certain things when it comes to teams at the moment, I think the crossing the line, it does nothing wrong with getting the ball forward. There's nothing wrong with, like, I played with a Longford Town team that we would half volley the ball into a corner and squeeze people. That's now becoming a trend. But there's nothing wrong with doing these things. There's nothing wrong with moving the ball forward and doing it quickly. Everything that 90% of what teams are doing, or they're doing 95% of it, is perfect. But there is a couple of teams, and Drogheda are probably the one that push a lot of the dark arts to its limit. But as I said, the league champions have a way of doing it where ball boys coming in, go missing with 5 minutes to go if they're winning, and all these dark arts are part of the game.
What was your favourite dark art, Vinny?
Well, we got accused of one of, when we played on AstroTurf pitch, the late Harry Taff used to water the goal that we were shooting into, and the ball would zip around. Now, genuinely, I didn't
when,
know.
When you say you got accused of it, Vinny, now, do you mean you did it or you didn't
no,
do it?
No, but it's funny. I actually didn't know about that one. Now, you'd have to ask Stephen Kenny that question one night, but I didn't know that was going on. If I did now, I'd tell you. I didn't know. But there was, you could see the sense in that, because when we were on the attack, the ball moves so much quicker on a wet AstroTurf pitch. But he used to go out at groundsman and wet the ground that we were attacking into. So there's all of these different things. I've seen ball boys being taken in with 5 minutes to go, as I said, with teams. There's hundreds of them. There's thousands of them. There's the great told the story before, but Delay, Ollie used to have a way where all of a sudden, 5 minutes before kickoff, 10 minutes before kickoff, showers would flood in Finn Park. Every time we went up there, if the game was kicking off at 7:30, they flood at 20 past, and if the game was kicking off at 8 o'clock the following night, they flood at 5 to 8, you know, just magically stuff. So everyone has dark arts. I'm not against them. But when we look at these timeouts that are in the game at the moment, they've gone too far. Honestly, Nathan, they're too far, and people have to call them out for what they are.
All right. One last game, Saturday night, Sligo Rovers against Pats. Sligo, well, both of these teams arguably finding a bit of form at just the right time. And Pats, like they did last year, not quite on the same calibre of run as they went on at the end of last season, Johnny, when they won 9 in a row. I'm sure a lot of Pats fans are looking at some of these performances and thinking, where have they been?
Yeah, definitely. And like, I mean, you say it's not the same run that they were on towards the end of last season, but it's not far off it. Like, these are the two form teams in the league at the moment, no question about it. And I was just actually looking back on it. Pats are unbeaten by any team other than Besiktas since the end of June, which is really incredible going. And you know, you can see that they're now finding their groove, they're finding their form, and as Vinny said, have Amelia as a real focal point in the team, but sort of ably assisted, let's say, by Levy and Power behind him. You know, they're going to cause anyone problems between now and the end of the season. And this is a real test now for Sligo Rovers at the weekend. They've been on a brilliant run. They really, really have. And every point is vital to them at this stage. But this is a Pats team now that is really motoring, and looking forward to watching them.
What do you think of the knock-on effect of the way Sligo went out Europe, Donny? Do you think that? You think they have to just park that? Obviously they do. But what do you think is the sort of reaction in the dressing room to that?
Pat's going out of Europe, you mean, Vin?
Going out of the cup.
No, I mean, Sligo going out of the cup. Sorry.
Oh, going out of the cup, sorry. I'd say, sure, look, at the end of the day, whatever way you would look at it in the Sligo dressing room, the only thing that's going to be important with the league position that they were in was staying up. And, you know, the cup can be a lovely distraction, but, you know, at the same time, these lads are going to be focusing on the league. And knowing John Russell and Ryan Casey, obviously, very well, like, if you looked at it back in July, end of June, they were detached. Couldn't see any way back for either themselves or Cork, and it's been a remarkable transformation. And I think what we said back at the time, and I think it's definitely become more true as we've looked at it, the recruitment was brilliant during the summer, and it made a huge, huge difference in the dressing room. Like, you're looking at O'Kane, you're looking at Patrick McLean. And to be honest with you, I don't see... I know they've got some tough games between now and the end of the season. They definitely do. But I don't see any way that they're in the playoff at this stage anyway. I just think they've got too much about them. I think they'll pick up too many points, and they've been brilliant.
All right, we shall leave it there for this week's League of Ireland podcast. So, busy week ahead. We have full live commentary tomorrow night from Tallaght Stadium. Shamrock Rovers against Bohemian, 7:45 kickoff. We'll be on the air from 7 o'clock. Jonathan Higgins and Owen Doyle on commentary for that. And then next Thursday night, we'll be back in Tallaght for Shelburne against Hacken in the Europa Conference League. So a lot coming up. We'll have League of Ireland late night again tomorrow night from 10 o'clock. We'll have a reaction on all our social channels as well over the next few days. Johnny, absolute pleasure. Vinny, we shall talk to you soon.
Good luck.
Thanks, Liz.
The League of Ireland pod.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts. Be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.